listening to the Confessions of a Clairvoyant Housewife podcast. From marriage to menopause and margaritas, nothing is off the table. This is Cindy Goldenberg.
Hi, everyone. This is Cindy Goldenberg, and it is December 2021, and we are in the middle of the holidays, and I hope everyone is doing well and enjoying themselves no matter where you are. I recently moved from the warm state and sunny state of Florida, both coasts, first Miami, then Sarasota, and now I live in Charlottesville, Virginia. It is absolutely beautiful here in the Blue Ridge Mountains. I live only a couple miles from one of the most beautiful universities in the country, University of Virginia. But most importantly, I moved here to be closer to my daughter, and I am enjoying the seasons and the colors of the leaves and the food and the people and the hospitality. But I'm going to tell you, I'm not real used to wearing shoes, no less closed-toed shoes and boots and scarves and hats and even gloves. I'm not used to it getting chilly. I haven't experienced this in a few years. But I will say, I am so glad I moved here because I had my second or final breast cancer mastectomy breast reconstruction surgery. Yes, this is another episode of Breast Reconstruction Part 3. I just recently had this surgery only a few days ago, and I'm feeling great, a little tender, a little sore, but I want to tell you all about it, how I came to this choice, how I came to find these doctors, and how I decided to move here and have my second surgery in this place. But before I tell you all the details, I want to let you know that I have this wonderful, great video class. It's called Developing Your Intuition with Cindy Goldenberg. I put together a video and my son edited it for a very long time, and we got it up on Selfie, which is a place where you can buy videos. It's under cindygoldenberg.selfie, which is SELLFY.store. Or you can just go to my website, which is cindygoldenberg.com. And I'm so excited, and a lot of people have already purchased it, and thank you so much, and I'm getting wonderful, wonderful feedback. You see, I have taught for years in workshops, in hotels, in hospitals for nurses' hours, in private homes. I love teaching. And the main principle that I have always told people is that you are innately intuitive. You are psychic. You are clairvoyant. You are connected. But there's so many variables. And people think, well, you have to be born with it. Or you have to know if you're talking to your mother or if you're talking to somebody that's walking around a haunted building. Or you have to do that. No. In this class, I'm telling you now, this is how I developed my intuition, and it became strong, evident, and effortless practically overnight. So I have broken this video class down into three parts: the how, the why, and the practice. And so even though it's a purchase of $50, you can keep it and you can use it over and over and over again, because each time you do, your awareness and your intuition will become more heightened. And you can always benefit by the meditations, the affirmations, and the releasements. But I want to go back to how I program this. So rather than just practicing and journaling and putting on music and meditating and thinking of angels or doing tarot cards, which is all fine, I wanted you to just simplify by understanding how your innate conscious psychic intuition works automatically, fluently, and consistently 24/7. And it does that by becoming aware of your choices, beliefs, patterns, and behaviors. Now, this isn't a video class about how you did everything wrong in life or what you did do for a certain way to protect yourself or any kind of condemnation or any kind of self-judgment or deprecation. In fact, it's the complete opposite. I've always advocated that everything is about worth. Everything is about self-worth. And everything is about learning to accept and receive love and guidance and beauty and worth and knowing that you are worth being heard and valued and answered. And that is a human practice that takes a conscious effort on your behalf. So through this class, I give you prompts and I ask you questions. And I don't ask you to think or write your best answer, but just be quiet and let it bubble up. And everything in your subconscious that you do not need will come forward. And when you realize it and you surrender it or bless it or forgive it or hand it over or just let go of it, designate a place for it to go where it's no longer with you, I guarantee your intuition will increase tenfold and more. And so how it will increase, will it be through clairvoyance where you see things with your eyes open like auras, or do you close your eyes and see pictures or symbols? Or is it through synchronicity where you constantly see things as if you're having a dialogue with the universe and they're answering you all the time? Or is it a physiological feeling, a sensation like cold air and chills or warm fuzzy feelings or emotions that come up or memories that may or may not even be yours? These are the ways that you must explore how your intuition works, because we're all different. I really hope that you take the time and that you purchase it and use it over and over again. It's called Developing Your Intuition with Cindy Goldenberg, and it's on cindygoldenberg.com or on cindygoldenberg.selfy, which is selfy.store. Thank you, and I look forward to hearing from you after you enjoy it and let me know how incredibly psychic you've become. Now back to my breast reconstruction surgery stories. Like I've told you before, I had a lot of triggers that came up when I had my breasts removed and when I walked around wearing these expanders and I went into the doctor and I got fills. And I think I talked about in my first podcast talking about before I had surgery, what it was like years ago to have the fear of, oh my God, what if I have to lose my breasts? And what if I have cancer one day like my mother and my grandmother? So this talk is different. It's behind me. So what did I have? This I had was where they take the expanders, which are, I swear to God, they felt like hubcaps. They felt like there were bolts and barbed wire in them, and they are tied to your muscle rib cage, and they are placed under the muscle wall, and they have a very hard, like a frisbee, kind of a plastic to it. And so they have a portal that's up high near your collarbone where right under your skin, there's like a half dollar and it's a piece of metal. And that portal is where the needle goes in with saline and they fill this Frisbee bag with saline water via the portal. And before they fill it, they take this little, it looks like a little hourglass, like a little toy about an inch long, and it twirls. It's a magnet and it twirls when it gets close to the metal so they know where to stick the skin. But like I used to say, who cares? I can't really feel anything anyway. And it's just like literally piercing, you know, numb skin, not even like your earlobe or anything else or even your finger. It's just like piercing a piece of paper. And so they would put 30 cc's in, sometimes 40, sometimes 50, and sometimes 60. And the saline would go inside the bag. And then the whole idea is that you go home and you have these bags and you've had the surgery where the breast was removed. So you have saggy skin and it's sewn up and you have, you wear like a bandage. And then as that heals, you can wear a very soft, like a sport bra or something like that. When I first had the surgery, as I explained, I had drainage tubes and things like that. So you don't have to wear a surgical bra all the time. You can just wear a regular soft one. And believe it or not, I found very lovely soft, more than an athletic bra, but not a bra like from some of the department stores. But I found very soft, stretchy bras that were in different colors and very soft at Walmart. And so I bought one in every color. And they were very comfortable to wear during my 6 months walking around with these implants. I mean, with these expanders. They're called expanders. So when I had the expanders put in, and I will tell you again, the mastectomy surgery of losing the skin tissue, having the tissue scraped off the wall of your rib cage. Yes, it hurts and it burns a little bit, but the first night in the hospital, the only night in the hospital, it was really nothing. You know, I was a little achy around the rib cage, but I talked to the nurse all night and we'd laugh and I'd tell her about, you know, hand lotions and let her try it and we'd just shoot the breeze. But anyway, I had these expanders put in after about a week or 10 days, they became very painful. And I slept in a recliner chair with multiple pillows on my lower back, under my shoulders, behind my head, under my arms, under my elbows, under my knees and legs. And I'm so tall that my feet went off the recliner and we had to get an ottoman. And then I had to be tucked in and I could reach the buttons on the side to make the recliner go back and it could come down so I could go to the bathroom in the middle of the night. And I slept in my own room. However, it was very hard to lift the blanket up and put it back on me. So when I was awake, I had help to do that. But in the middle of the night, I had to do it alone. And just lifting a blanket or a comforter or a sheet was extremely difficult for many weeks for me. And that pain was excruciating. I would compare it to having a tractor with big blades twirling around in my rib cage. And I was on a lot of Percocet and a lot of muscle relaxants and anything else. And I only slept a couple hours here and there. And it was a difficult, difficult process. Now, somebody else may not have had a hard time, but I did. And like I told you before, on my left breast where the breast cancer was, which was tiny, 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 like a little sunflower seed, I had radiation because they told me, even though we're catching it early and we're going to get it in a lumpectomy, you should get radiation because that way it will guarantee that it will not come back in that breast. And then you go on a estrogen blocker when you see the oncologist, and that estrogen blocker will protect both breasts and you'll be fine. And that's the same as having a mastectomy. And then, you know, you get to 5 years and then you're good. So like I told you before, I got talked into that and went, yeah, okay. But the thing is my mother had breast cancer on the left and had a mastectomy in her 50s, and so did my grandmother. And even though I don't have the BRCA gene, and I did about $17,000 worth of genetic study, and I don't have a lot of the genetic markers for a lot of cancers, I still knew that this was probably going to happen in my life. And so to go back and repeat, I had breast surgery in both breasts prior to the breast cancer 3 years prior with what they call hyperplasia. And my hyperplasia was abnormal, and I had different sizes everywhere, but just long story short, it was 10 masses, 6 on the left, 4 on the right. And when I had that surgery in 2016 of December, I was cut up and my areola area and nipple, both of them went concave, and especially the left side that had more masses. I looked like train tracks everywhere, and I became numb with no sensation, but I was alive, and we caught all that pre-cancer, that hyperplasia, that means all these cells are in the breast duct, and they're fat, and they're ready to burst through, and when they burst through, that's when they call it in situ. That's when it becomes cancer. So man, I was lucky to get that all done, and because I was lucky that we got it done, I got to get MRIs. So I had an MRI the following year, which was fine, as well as mammograms and ultrasounds. And then 2 years later, which would be 3 years after that surgery, I had another MRI, and that's when the tiny little cancer on the left side lit up like a Christmas tree. That's what they said. And I knew, I heard my intuition say, it's cancer, and then it won't be. So I felt very calm. I felt very unafraid. I felt very almost impatient. And I'd look at the nurses from the MRI, and I'd look at them and I'd go, okay, it lit up. I think it's cancer. Oh, well, you don't know that. It could be this and that. And I get that they all want to protect you from this awful, awful, awful word called cancer. But frankly, I've dealt with sciatic nerve pain that has taken my ass off and put me into different universes and put me on my back, literally, for over 4 years. That was so painful that the cancer was literally nothing more than a pimple in my life. But anyway, it stirs emotion in people. It stirs sympathy and compassion, and that's all good. So I'm not belittling it. I'm just telling you from my perspective. I looked at it like a non-issue. So when I had it, they don't tell you right away, you know. You have to go in for more biopsies. You get in the MRI. You have to put your hands up. You have to lay down. They take your breasts. They put them in this Lego gridlock, and then they take all this blood and extraction, and they suction out different things, all these biopsies, and sometimes they put you on your back. I had that too before the hyperplasia surgery, where they put you on your back and they stick you with this gun and they suction it out. So after weeks and weeks of that, you know, the first time when I had hyperplasia, I was like, enough already, let's just do the surgery. So now here I am 3 years later, and it's in the late summer. And I have to sit and go through and come back next month and we'll do this biopsy. Come back and this. And in my mind, I go, it's cancer, and then it's not going to be. It's no big deal. Let's just get there. No, we have to go do this. We have to make sure it's not a cyst. So I had to sit with this for a while. I tell you this because someone you know may go through this. And this is part of my advice, is that you do sit with it. Some people get afraid. This is when you reach out to friends, and this is when you Google everything and go, what if, what if, what if? And you can't really find any kind of facts that say, oh, this is what's going to happen if you do this, or if you do this, that will happen. Instead, you just get all the same things when you Google, which is the rate of surviving and breastcancer.org and pink ribbon sites. They're nice. I mean, I've bought pink ribbon things for many years. And like I say, my mother and grandmother had this, but it didn't really answer me. I just had to be patient. So by the time November came around, it was after my birthday, end of October. So they finally called, and I knew the woman at Mount Sinai in Miami who coordinates all your surgeries and stuff, because I had it done 3 years prior when it wasn't cancer. It was just gonna be cancer. So they say, atypical hyperplasia. So now I'm here 3 years later, and she says, Cindy, would you like to come in for an appointment? And in my mind, I go, no, I've been fucking waiting here for months. I already know what it is. I don't want to come sit and have this dramatic conversation. Let's just do it. So I said, nope, let's get this party started. Get the doctor on the line. Let's arrange it. Let's do the next step. And so she's like, okay. And I appreciate, my God, these people, these women, these halls are filled with angels and pink ribbons. And I don't know if I would have the stamina to work in an environment like that. And I respect that they whisper and that they talk in soft tones. But I'm like, what the hell? It's November in Miami. It's a sunny, warm day. Let's have a good Argentinian beer. Get the doctor on the phone. So he gets on the phone and he says, as you know, blah, 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 blah. And then he says, you know, it's cancer and it's really little and, you know, it just showed up, but we compared it to the other thing. Whatever he said, I don't even know. All I know is I got it. Now what? Now what? So as he finished talking what he does, they switched me back to my lady friend who made the appointment with the breast cancer surgeon, whom I knew quite well because I met him and had surgery 3 years prior. And when I was there this time, I said, hello, doctor, good to see you again, blah, blah, blah. And we chatted and he said, you know, this is really small. We can get it with a lumpectomy. Something in me just bubbled up. And I'm friendly and frisky in my Miami jeweled sandals and my pretty bright colors and my makeup and happiness. And I just said, okay, but while we're here, can I ask you a question? Don't you think it's kind of odd that I was here just 3 years ago and had 10 masses removed? What about mastectomy? And I was thinking even mastectomy just on the left side. Right away, he wrinkled his nose and he frowned. He goes, oh, no, you don't want to do that. You don't want to. You know, it's so small. That could have sat in there years. That kind of cancer, it was, you know, like, it's like, meh. And in that moment, my intuition said, how the fuck would I know what kind of cancer it is and how many years it would sit in there unnoticed, or it would have been no big deal. I don't know that. But I swallowed that thought, because it was only a nanosecond. And then I kind of persisted and maybe moved my legs from one position to another and sat in the chair and tried again and said, yeah, but my mom and my grandmother had this, you know, and even though I don't have the BRCA gene, what if I had a mastectomy or I had you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. It's painful. It's awful. And it is. And I get it. But I asked the question, what if? Why am I here 3 years later? Don't you think it's odd that I'm here for something that you were preventing to happen? And now it's happening, even with all the MRIs and being special to have MRIs. I called it being in the MRI club. And you got to remember, most women don't get MRIs unless it's something serious. most get mammograms. And if I just waited for mammograms, that sucker would have been really big. I can't even imagine what would have happened. So I was in gratitude and grateful. And I went, okay. And he goes, I can take it right out. We probably already got it in the biopsy. And I could schedule you and I'll have my girl call you. And I went, okay. So I had two bubbling thoughts, but I swallowed them because I live in joy. I sometimes don't have my feet on the ground. Mount Sinai is surrounded by water and it's beautiful everywhere you look, in Miami, in the water, in the sun, and I'm healthy and I'm lucky and look at me. Oh my God. Okay. I trust. So I go do Pilates. I drink my Argentina beer at my favorite little outdoor cafe and life goes on. So now after I have the breast cancer surgery, I just said, by the way, I have sciatic pain. And when you put me under, don't wake me up. Let me have a long nap. And he did. And I went home and he said, like I said, it was so small. We got it all. You have clean margins. You're good to go. Okay. Thank you, doctor. Love you. Good seeing you again. Thank you. Thank you. What a beautiful surgery center. Oh my God. Look around at all the water and jet skiers and the yachts and the boats. I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky. So now I go see the radiologist and she's about the most uptight little prunish woman, not your typical Miami Latin goddess MD, but I'm not putting her down. I'm just being descriptive so you get the idea, you know. Don't come to Miami if you don't like being in an international setting or you don't have a dog because everybody is international and has an accent, lives somewhere else, or comes from somewhere else. Everybody has a different attitude that they bring to the table from their home country, and everybody has dogs. So to see someone that's a little bit more traditional, ordinary, plain, strict, black, white, yes, no, up, down answers, should I get radiation? Up to you. You're still going to get MRIs. What's that mean? Well, you know, some people get it, some people don't. What do you mean? Do I or don't I? So after about this going back and forth, I finally went, okay, I'll do it. Because my doctor suggested it and said, yeah, you'll be fine. So now I sign up and I meet some really fun, sweet guys. And they get me all situated with the little tiny marker tattoo. And you learn to get in a position and you practice your breathing before your real radiation starts in January. So the month of December, I had a few rehearsals because it's on the left side. They have to be very careful and not, you know, affect your heart. And you have to learn how to breathe and you have to learn how to let go. Anyway, you get the gist. So I felt happy because they were happy and they were funny and silly. And plus the nurses were too. So once again, I thought, aren't I lucky? I get to come in this facility. I get dropped off at the door. And so now I start my radiation. And I pop in and I know the routine, like a little locker that you would get at a gym or a spa. And you put your little robe in. And it's my turn. I go back, lay on the machine, get the little cushions under the shoulder, put my arm up, put the other one there. The music is playing. And you breathe in and hold it. And you exhale, and you repeat for a few minutes every day, 3 weeks. And then I thought, I'm done. So now the next part was to meet the oncologist. And like I say, I marveled at all my international Russian, Serbian, Italian, Latin, Spanish from Spain, Portugal, Brazilian, I mean, international MDs, especially the women that look like the cover of Vogue. I mean, gorgeous women doctors and men. But I had a nice older man and he was the oncologist. And now I've already done the radiation because I wanted to make sure, you know, I didn't have any effects or get nauseous. And I didn't want to start a medication that I may get sick, so I didn't start till around March. So I saw him mid-March. And he walked in the room, and the first thing he said is, I worry about you, because you had atypical hyperplasia and you are very high risk. And I'm like, okay, in my mind, I thought, okay, I know, I've heard that, I hear that, but I did something about it. I had the radiation, I had the surgery, I'm taking the medication, I'm not having any effect from it. I'm off of my happy compounded hormones, and yes, I want to kill somebody, and I'm sweating like a pig often, but I'm craving steak and meat, and I've been a vegetarian for 21 years, and now my diet has changed, but I'm in the game. I'm doing what you told me to do. But I'll never forget, he just was quietly solemn and sobering, and I didn't blink, and I said, what does that mean? And he said, that means that you're a very high risk. And hyperplasia, when it comes back with a vengeance. And all of a sudden, the light bulb went on. I had atypical hyperplasia. It came back. It was cancer. Still, whew, man, I caught it early. Good for me. So he said, take the medication, we'll do some blood work, see you in 3 months or 6 months or whatever. But he said those words, and I just asked him what that meant. So he just was very sobering, like, you're very high risk. And I thought, okay, but I'm taking the meds. I'm in good hands. I'm in control. I'm obedient. I'm where I'm at. I'm a little hot and sweaty, but I'll be okay. And I will follow up with a breast cancer surgeon once I make the move to the Gulf Coast in Sarasota. So I move and I found a breast cancer surgeon, a lovely woman, but it wasn't so easy. I couldn't pick up the phone and say, hi, can I come in and be seen? Why? Do you have a referral? No. How do I get one? Tell your other surgeon that you need to be seen. So I had to go back and forth. Anyway, a lot of red tape. You don't just call and walk in. Because when I did meet her, she said, yeah, usually you stay with your surgeon for the whole 5 years. And I said, yeah, but I don't live there. I live here. And my papers say, have a follow-up with the breast cancer surgeon in 6 months. It's 6 months and you're a breast cancer surgeon. So she kind of chuckled and said, yeah, but that's not really how it works. And I said, what do you mean? And she says, usually you get recommended to come here if you want surgery or if you do have cancer because you go to your regular primary and you do your diagnostic screenings. And I go, not me. No. So I'm glad I got all the paperwork together. But right away, she looked at me with her beautiful blue eyes and she was upbeat and probably a young mother. And she looked at me and said, wow, you know, did you know that you're really high risk? And boom, right away, I thought that's what the oncologist said. He said the same thing, but he said it very sobering, like an older judge, you know, with gray hair and looking over his spectacles, like I'm in trouble, like you're very high risk. And she just said, you're very high risk. And I right away recapped everything I just told you, told her everything about how it all happened in the beginning and how I never really had any symptoms, but I was seeing an alternative MD and I had a thermogram because I had, you know, repeated mammograms and they said, come back like 3-4 times. And then my alternative MD said, let's take pictures. And we made the room cold and we took pictures. And then when I went in to see the surgeon, I said, don't make fun of me. This isn't FDA approved. These are just color charts, but it shows that there's spots in my breast, but this is Miami. There's a juice bar on every corner. Everybody's into alternative medicine. And he said, okay, let's do an MRI. And boom, 10 masses he found. So now I'm sitting with this beautiful Nordic blonde woman MD. And she explains to me after she heard my stories and after she heard me say to my doctor, don't you think that's kind of odd that I'm here 3 years later with cancer? She said, not only is that a very good question, that's an excellent observation, and you're right, it is odd. You are very high risk. And did you know that after 5 years, you don't get to be in your MRI club anymore. And I went, what? Yes, this is true. Once you are at 5 years, you revert back to the line to become the average citizen, and you're no longer invited into the specialized follow-up MRI. You just get mammograms like everybody else. And I thought, are you out of your fucking mind? With my history and my mother and my grandmother, and you think you're going to just do a mammogram and it's not going to show up? Because obviously they did multiple mammograms and they did ultrasounds and nothing showed up until the MRI. And when the MRI, it was hyperplasia and then it was cancer 3 years later. You're talking to me. I need to have specialized front row dedicated VIP treatment. You can't just throw me back to the wolves and say, hang in there. You're at your 5 year mark. So the light bulb went on. And then she says, well, do you want to have the prophylactic mastectomies? And at first I said, no, I have to think about it, or yes, or, but you know, she wasn't pressuring me. She just sat there and talked another 15 minutes in great detail about what a high risk was, how I was in the 25 percentile versus the average population of 4%, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, she graciously, like having tea, went over all the little data and statistics that made me extremely aware and informed in just under a minute. Something I had never been told before. And I wasn't treated like, oh, you did something wrong. In fact, she understood the POV, the point of view of the other surgeon. She understood that they always want to do conservative. I told her about the radiologist. I said, I couldn't get anything out of her. It's like a bitter lemon. I couldn't squeeze anything, any information. She goes, yeah, that's the cancer world. We really can't talk about things like that. But she was so friendly, like a girlfriend, and she informed me, and the light went on. And I asked her, yes, I want the mastectomy. So she recommended a plastic surgeon. So I went right away and I had this surgery. So I am telling you all this. And even if you heard it before in the previous podcast, I want to tell you how it all came to happen. So now I felt empowered because I don't want to be treated like anybody and average and start over when I'm closer to 70. And God forbid something doesn't show up on an MRI because I'm not entitled to one. And I only have a mammogram and then a lump or something shows up and now it's too late, or it's stage, you know, I had stage zero. It'd be 1, 2, 3, or 4. And now I'm older. Forget it. I don't want that. I want a life. So now I go to the plastic surgeon, and I don't know if I've told you, he was a real ass. Hated him. Didn't hate him when I first met him. I just thought, he's nerdy. But I'm kind of an anatomy. I got an A in anatomy in college, although I didn't in other things because I can't do math. So chemistry and physiology, not so much. But I have a photographic memory, and I would look at those pages. So when I hear someone talk about what they do to the body, and I ask questions, what kind of cancer do you see? And I go, I know you're not a cancer doctor, but do you see people come back with one mastectomy? Do they do the other one? I could see his pupils dilate. I just wanted to ask him questions. And he was a nerdy, reserved guy. Fine. I loved her. And if she recommended him, he must be great. And he's got awards on his desk and stuff. But here's what I'm going to tell you. When I went back and I got my pre-op and what's going to go on, I noticed that he was just stared at the floor, or he's always kind of frowning and everything. He just wasn't, you don't have to be jovial. He just wasn't friendly, and he was very persnickety and precise, a perfectionist in his own mind. And really what it is from a spiritual aspect is, he doesn't have worth, so he's defensive that he's not good enough, so he has to remind you that he is. And how that played out is when I went in to get my fills, I dealt with the nurse most of the time, and it was very quiet, and it was down in Sarasota on what they call the Lido key, which is The keys are really islands connected by bridges. So there's little shops and restaurants, and even though it's COVID and post-COVID, whatever, you walk around with a little mask, but you can sit outside. It's a nice little area. But when I would go in there, there's no music playing, there's no livelihood. But what happened is a couple weeks after my mastectomy and this surgery, breast reconstruction, my legs were swollen, and I took a nap, and I woke up around 7 p.m., and I asked my son to take me to a little local small doctor ER. They were real busy, and we were there till 5 a.m., and with all the edema I had and all the swelling in my ankles, I looked like elephant legs. They said, oh my God, you might have fluid on the heart. So they had to do CAT scans and things. And they also called the breast cancer surgeon at 4 a.m, who apparently called him at 6 a.m. because he left a message for me to call. So I got a few hours sleep. When I called at 9:30, he tore me a new one. Oh my God, you scared Dr. So-and-so. You called her. What the hell are you doing in an ER for? You made a fool out of me. Why didn't you come to see me? And it was about my legs. 99% of me wanted to let that scorpion fuck you rage out and do it slowly and methodically, where you get on your hands and knees and you beg me to kill you because you are so guilt-ridden and so sorry for talking to me in such a asinine, subhuman way. But I was just too frickin' tired to care. And I thought, it's so evident that you are so pathetic and have no worth or whatever else. I don't give a shit. I just said, okay, I'll see you in 45 minutes. I had my son drive me in, and then he got real busy and cleaned up the incision and put me on a different antibiotic and explained everything what could have happened and this and this. And then he realized because of the nurse, and even she was like red face and looking down and scared. We're all acting codependent. Like, did you go because of your chest or because of your legs? And we realized it was because of my legs. And went, well, you went and did everything right. And I thought, fuck you, asshole. Is that your apology? Anyway, I rolled with it and I figured I see her and I don't really care. But as time went on, and one other time I had to see him months later, and I had to go really slow because I was swollen and I did have back sciatic and I did have injections and I did have PRP, which is causes inflammation to cause growth and collagen in my back, which maybe might have not been a good idea. It was prior to the surgery because it relieved a lot of pain. But I was so inflamed and swollen, and I'm older, and I just didn't do well. And the medication made me, I don't know, just all kinds of symptoms with muscle relaxants. I've only had 2 or 3 my whole life, and here I'm taking 3 and 4 a day. So when I saw him a couple months later, he said, not mean, but in his typical little nerd self, you know, you're going too slow. You're not healing fast enough. And once again, I thought, unfucking believable. So I said, okay, go ahead and put a little more cc's in. So he put 60 cc's in. And I said, but I was just here, you know, 4 days ago with the nurse, and I got 40. You can do it. You can do it. There's plenty of room. You can do it. You can do it. Now I'm up to 100 cc's, and I'm telling you, I may not be dying like I was with the tractor blade feeling, but these are very uncomfortable, and there's times where you feel like your ribs are going to, like if someone took your arm and they twisted it, you know, like when you're wrestling with someone or somebody beating you up or whatever, I don't know, but you go, ow, 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 stop. It felt like that, like, oh my God, my bones are twisting in my chest. And sure enough, when I went in the following couple weeks and saw the nurse, she felt under my armpit and the top of the expander. So my breast looks like a little tiny half cantaloupe, you know, and right in that little crease, she put her finger there. She goes, ooh, I think there's a torn muscle. So she told him and they ordered an ultrasound. And I thought, asshole. You filled me too fast for me, and you tore my muscle. Well, I got an ultrasound. It wasn't a tear, but it was definitely a pull. So once again, I don't know how to stand up for myself and say no, but thank God I had a friend that I made from another dermatology office, and it was a nurse who said, call me, and we became friends because she went through it 5 years prior. And she said, look, I have chronic fatigue and other things. And even though I didn't have radiation, I took my time. I took 6 months, and the doctor said, no problem. So I felt like, God, I love this surgeon, but I got like the short end of the shitty stick with this plastic surgeon. So as time went on, and I knew where I lived, my lease was up, and I was missing my daughter and her dog. And I thought, I only saw her for 8 hours in 1 year compared to seeing both of my kids regularly, either flying back and forth, but with COVID quarantine, I realized everything shut down. But I was depressed and I didn't know it, but I thought, I'm just in pain with one thing or another all the time, and all I can do is try to walk around. And it wasn't until 3 months I finally could put a little bathing suit on and get in the water, and it was hot. And I tried to move around the little shallow pool, and I thought, I'm just miserable. So I read that there's a time period where you can let the breast rest, like after the fills. My expanders were 650, I believe. That's the largest they make. And it was put in under the chest wall. So as I got close to 600 at my rate and with the nurse, I told the nurse, I think I'm going to get a different surgeon. And what happened is I started thinking about moving up where I live now. And then I remembered, oh my God, University of Virginia. Wow, that's like a Harvard without the snobbery. These are really bright people and really great doctors and really. And I started looking at what they do, from transgender to this and this and this and all the cutting edge. And I thought, oh my God, the head of the plastic surgery, he's like a god to me. He's just this beautiful angelic man. I'm looking at the videos, I'm reading, I'm calling the office. I talked to the main person. I said, do you think he would take me as a patient? So I waited all weekend. She called back on a Monday. She said, absolutely. I'm sorry you were treated the way you were. This doctor will see you. And he said, don't you worry, you can take your time and those expanders can sit in there forever and we'll see you when you get here. And I said, I will see you in 3 months, 2 months actually. I said, I will see you in 2 months. And I cried. I was so happy. And I hung up and I found a lease on the place I wanted to live and everything fell into place. And I told them, I'm only coming back one or two times with maybe 30 cc's here and there, and then I'm moving, and it was fine, and he didn't care, and the nurse was moving as well, so I gave her a lot of my stuff. But my point is, I got up here, and so when I saw him, of course he said, I would have done it differently, I would have put it on top of the skin, because now, or not on top of the skin, on top of the muscle, now we have better ways of putting the expanders on top of the chest wall and supplying the skin with more circulation so you heal more quickly and it's less pain. I thought, I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. I could have come here. I could have had a V8. I could have had an easier surgery. Then he said, however, I'm booked until maybe January. So I hung in there. I went in a couple times. I'd take pictures and send it on email. I go, the left breast that was radiated, it's red. They'd put me on an antibiotic. I go, it feels like it's crawling up under my armpit. There's nuts and bolts and barbed wire in there. Yeah, that's what happens on radiated skin. So then he calls and says, I can take you December 6th, my mother's birthday, my mother in heaven, and my daughter's dog birthday. And I said, oh my God, that's like 10 days away. We can do it. I said, I'm in. So I went in this last Monday and I said, I'm so ready. And I had the expanders taken out. It was a 1-day outpatient surgery. And I thought, okay, when I had it done the first time with the mastectomy and the expanders put in, I was up all night putting on hand lotion and kibitzing and chit-chatting with the nurse. I'll be fine if it's an outpatient. Well, I went in. I had it. He said, I'm going to try to put silicone 600, 700 in each side. We'll see. Now, the right one that has plenty of skin and never had radiation, that's the good breast. That's like changing a tire. It's real easy. The left one, however, I don't know till I get in there how much scar tissue you have, what I can do, et cetera, et cetera. But he said, this one I'm going to try and do. And I'm also going to probably go through the same incision. So when I woke up, he didn't go in the same incision. He went down a little bit because of the scar tissue. And my implant is silicone. And I've had many people on Facebook and other things go, be careful, be careful, be careful. And just quick note, I am, and I understand the whole thing about silicone versus saline, but I just want to get through this process. And if I have to switch them out in the future, but I want to get through the process, and let me explain to you what that process is. So I woke up, but before I went under, he looked at me with his big blue eyes, and you could tell it was uncomfortable for him to be honest about things that we don't like talking about. And he said, you know, I'm going to do my best, and you need to heal, which means you need to get an abundant, rich, oxygenated blood supply. And it's hard because you had radiation and that skin hardens like cement. Because if you don't get a blood supply in the skin on the left side, I'm going to have to take the implant out. And I said, I knew that. I know that. And I understand. So he says, but we'll see what we can do. So I thought, I've come this far. It's like a art project or a science project. I have a small breast, even though 600 cc's or 630 cc's on the left. And my right one looks a little larger, but I look like a small-breasted athletic woman. And for being 6'1", I had not larger breasts, but fuller breasts that I could go to a nice department store and get a nice bra, and I looked curvy or proportioned in my clothes. And now I look athletic, but it's fine. But now that I've gone through the surgery, and yes, I woke up, and I was so grateful not to have any sciatic pain, because they have really good pain management MDs here in this town as well. And so I'm a lot better in that respect. But I woke up and the incision burned like hell. And I was screaming like, oh my God, I'm on fire. What the hell? What the hell? It didn't hurt the first time when you cut them off. When you scrape the tissue out of my body, this hurts. What the hell? And my anesthesiologist, very lovely, young, tall, handsome man, he said, I'm sorry, it's just going to hurt. And my wife went through this a few years ago, and I said, I'm sorry. But I didn't know how long it would hurt, and it hurt for about 10 hours. And I took all my painkillers, and then it subsided, and I iced a lot. But the incision did burn, and then it subsided, and I feel so much better with these expanders gone, and I'm wearing a surgical bra, and my skin feels like a breast. It feels like jello, and they're small, but they're intact. And I'm praying, and you can help envision blood supply on the left side so it can hold this implant. And if it can hold this implant in 6 to 8 months, the next surgery will be fat grafting, where they take fat with a blood supply. If you have a good blood supply going to that area, they will take fat from your lower belly or your hips, and they will apply it under the skin to round out and soften the breast. And I thought, well, I'm down. That sounds good. Flatter stomach sounds good to me. But that's really cosmetic. And in all honesty, I am so grateful to have a loving, caring, eye-to-eye contact, angelic, wonderful doctor and staff that look at me like I'm the only patient in the world, that really care about everything I think of. And I'm really, really lucky to have someone talk to me or return calls the minute I email or have any kind of question, and they let me know. And I would tell him, at least I'm here. I can't believe I did it. I'm not going to lie, it was a hard move. I'm usually really good and have a lot of stamina, but I had a lot of help, especially from my young, buff, strong son, because I couldn't lift more than a plate or two. But I moved and I got here, and this doctor took care of me. It's a 180 compared to the other one down in Sarasota. So for that, I'm grateful. Now, here's the part I regret. And this is why I'm doing this podcast, so you can learn from my doubts, regrets, second guessing, Monday morning quarterback. I wish I would have found a doctor that I loved and adored and revered and couldn't wait to be in the presence of, like the doctor that I have. I wish I would have insisted on that. There's a lot of smart people out there, and there's a lot of smart doctors, and there's a lot of people, and you figure, yeah, I'm not a doctor. They know better. They do this every day. But if you don't like them, if you don't want to hang, if you can't imagine going over to their living room, playing with their dog and their kids, and you want to, then find someone you feel that will make you feel like that, that will make you feel welcome and will appreciate you as much as you appreciate them. I looked up a few things before I sat down here, and in a Journal of American Medicine, I don't know, it's a little study, so, but what I'm going to say, it hit home. It wasn't hundreds of people. It was just a few hundred women. JAMA 2017 says more than half of women who had mastectomies made a reconstruction decision that didn't align with their goals and preferences. In other words, over 50%, closer to 55 or 60% of women did not get their goals or preferences met, meaning they didn't get what they thought, they didn't get where they wanted to be. Why? Because they weren't educated. Why? Because it's not the standard to be told. Why? Because they don't know what to ask. To hear didn't align with their goals and preferences means, what the fuck? I shouldn't have not done this. I should have said this. I should have asked this. I should have done this. And again, when it comes to cancer, everybody's like, oh, I pray for you. I send you light. And that is all good and well. But I didn't have a bad cancer experience like so many people close to me have that are dead now. I did not have an awful cancer experience at all. I am merely sharing with you what it is to have breasts, not have breasts, create breasts, think if I need them or not, would I have done this with all that pain, and have learned, like I told you, many young women who have had, unfortunately, breast cancer go halfway through, get them out. I can't do the expanders. It's too painful. I quit. So I now have a little more respect for my original breast cancer surgeon who said, you don't want to do this. It's really rough. I get it. But I am more than half of a woman who had a mastectomy and made a reconstruction decision that did not align with my goals or preferences because I didn't even know what the hell I was supposed to ask for. So basically, the article went on to say, women don't get treatment they need. This is some other things I saw that, like, when you get your expanders, it says, yes, it's painful, but you can do relaxation and guided meditations. No, you can't. You can't. You can't get in a fucking position no matter what you do. You cannot get burning explosive fireworks out of your rib cage. You cannot move your body. You cannot sleep on your side. You cannot function. Maybe you can if you do. Good luck, and I'm glad you did. But I could not. So when I read stuff like that, I feel like going, that's the kind of shit that you put on Google on the first 100 pages that we read that think, oh, if I lay down and I listen to a chakra meditation music, I'll be okay. No. And then the other thing I read was 40 to 60% of mastectomies have chronic pain longer than 3 months. That's just mastectomy. Now, I don't know what it's like to just have a mastectomy because I had the expanders. But I definitely didn't have a lot of pain with the mastectomy. The skin was numb. What was painful was the expanders being sewn to my rib cage. And it was definitely longer than 3 months. And like I say, nowadays, like this great doctor that I have said, we have found that going above the chest wall is a lot less painful and a more speedy recovery. And I'm like, oh my God, live and learn. And I also read that a lot of times they wait 6 to 12 months later after radiation to do the breast reconstruction. Well, like I told you, I was diagnosed in November and I had surgery in December of 2019, and I had radiation at the beginning of 2020 before the pandemic, and then 2021, like a year and a half later, I had the surgery. So, you know, I trust that I was guided and that I have loved ones and angels that guided me through this whole process. So I don't want to say regrets. I just want to say it's happened for a reason, so I can tell you all this so you can be informed, because you can't Google it and you have to talk about it and you have to find a nurse or a PA or somebody, or even after hours, that can really talk and tell their story. So this is my advice. Number one, ask questions about your future. What if this? What if I slip on a banana peel? What if I don't like milk anymore? What if, I don't care what the questions are. Ask questions about your future. And if they say, we really don't know, then find someone you can talk to and say, I know you're a doctor and you can only talk about cancer and the rate of surviving, but is there someone here at this hospital or doctor's office, or can you refer me to a women's group or some group? How can I get these questions answered? That seems like common sense. But I have common sense, and I didn't do that because I assume they know more than me, and I'm in good hands because of where I live and my great insurance, and I'm in a VIP club. So my second piece of advice is go to 2 breast cancer surgeons. The one woman I met in Sarasota was completely different. She wasn't like, yeah, 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 cut them off. It's the only way to live. She wasn't that way at all. She just reacted without blinking when I said my story, which was about the other doctor. Gee, don't you think it's kind of odd that I'm here 3 years later? And she went, yeah, it is. That's a good question to ask. And yeah, you have another breast. And yeah, you're going to hit the 5-year mark. And yeah, you're high risk. Boom, 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 boom. I should have been talked to that way. I should have been told, listen, it is a very difficult procedure, but it is your choice. But here are some things you should know. Your situation is X, Y, Z, Z, Z. Now, we don't know the future, but you could do this, and it would help if you took the pills and radiation. But if you chose to do this, you wouldn't be the first. You wouldn't be the last. Something. If you're not, even if you love, love, love your doctor and you love the facility and all the pink ribbons in the hallways and the pretty music and the lovely tropical plants in the lobby, if you're not being really, you don't have to have fear, but if you're not really being cultivated and cradled and swaddled and nurtured with information, go find it. The other one, go to 2 plastic surgeons. I got so wrapped up because I loved her. I thought she's just the cat's meow. Anything she says, she's the best. She's, look at her reviews. Look at, she's the head of the hospital. Yeah, he's good, but he's an anal, retentive, angry, bitter, miserable, awful person. And I wish I didn't go to him. And I settled. And I just looked and rationalized in my brain, well, he knows what he's doing. It's close by, and this wonderful doctor recommended him. Be in love. Be in joy. Be ready to go get pink slippers when you go into the hospital because you're so happy to be there. Find somebody you can laugh with. Don't go to a plastic surgery office where they do cosmetic procedures that doesn't have glamorous, beautiful products and people in the lobby and music. That's a red flag. Like, the wife ran the office and she just stared at the floor and just never took messages. Oh my God. Be happy. Find happy people. Go to more than one surgeon. It's not about them and their techniques, because even before I left, he goes, well, if you have this, you should have saline. And if you had this, you should have this. This doctor said that would injure your skin and blood supply. So I don't tell that to people who go, well, I had my implants removed. Look, I understand the whole idea about sensitivity and the dangers and risks of silicone. But right now, I'm just trying to heal and get a little blood supply. Okay? And I love my doctor. The other thing, big, 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 big. Big capital letters, neon sign. I should have said this first. I don't know if they'll let you in, but knock on the door and don't take no for an answer. Go talk to an oncologist before having surgery. By the time I saw him, and by the time I told him I'm ready to take medication and I don't have any effects from the radiation, I don't have any effects after being off of hormones, I'm ready to give it a try. But if I can't do it, I'm not going to do it. Right, right, right. He didn't give a shit about that. He walked in the room with his little spectacles and his chin down. And he just said, I'm worried about you. You're very high risk. And I thought, oh my God, I would have loved to have heard those words before I had the surgery. And I would have asked, am I a high risk? What's high mean? What's high? How many percentage? What's that mean? Out of how many people? You do this every day. What's that mean? What's that mean? Am I moderate? What's that mean? Am I low? What's that mean? And when he said, the hyperplasia comes back. What do you mean it comes back? What do you mean it comes back? What do you mean? Is it hyperplasia or is it cancer? Was the cancer hyperplasia indicative of the cancer that came? What's that mean? What's that mean? Maybe, probably, more than probably, most likely, never going to happen. Give me a hint. So when he said that, I thought, I wish I would have asked all these questions beforehand. And then you have to find people who have gone through it, who are willing to talk about it. Because everyone is different. I can't tell anyone what to do. But all I know is I would have moved here sooner, or I would have waited to find this doctor. I would have flown up here to interview him. And I would have said, when I move, I'm going to have this surgery and reconstruction. What if I did that? What if I did that? I was fine. But to have a mastectomy and to have the expanders on the outside of my chest wall and to be seen by the doctor I have now, wow, that would have been so different. But this is the down low. I went 6 months with expanders. After 3 months, I could do the grocery store more than one aisle. After 4 months, I could really walk around a lot and I felt pretty good. I couldn't unpack as fast and quickly as I used to. But after 5 months, I was hurting and I wanted them out because I could tell the left one had nowhere to go. And it was piercing and pulling down to my waist and rib cage and my scapula in the back. And by the 6 month, I just thought, oh my God, how am I going to make it till January? And thank God they called, because that was a long time. But I wish I would have made a better, more informed decision and not just got caught up in gratitude. So even though I teach all these concepts and it's a good thing to be, and it's so hard to be vulnerable and you don't have to be emotional and you don't have to be right all the time, and gratitude is good. I remember the first time I had the hyperplasia surgery. I was there all freaking day. And you had to go up to the mammogram place. And I had to take, I couldn't eat. And then I had to have these wires that hung out of me like a mobile on the ceiling. They were like these dangling wires because they had to place it right where all the masses were. So you had these 12-inch boing, boing, boing. I had 4 on one side and 3 on the other. And I'm walking around with these things. And by the time I had the surgery, it was close to 4:30 and I had no water and we couldn't get a vein. And I remember making a joke saying, wait till you see the anesthesiologist. He's really handsome and your heart will start pumping and they'll get a vein. And he was, and my heart did. And then I came home like at 11 o'clock at night. But I thought, my God, I was like eggplants for like 4 or 5 weeks, just so mangled and bruised. That should have been something like, my God, we didn't take out one little thing. We just redecorated my entire breast and nipple and areola, everything. I'm in a high risk category. So the more you know, it doesn't mean that you know your choices. It means that you feel safe in asking, and then you can ask another person, even if you know you don't want to go to that other person. Pay the money, do whatever it takes, go get second opinions, and see an oncologist before. In the meantime, help me visualize that I have blood supply on the left side, that I get my surgical bras in the mail because I woke up thinking I was going to be wrapped in tape. Instead, they put me in a bra that was so tight, it actually blistered and cut under my arm and under my, like along the rib cage. And on the second night, I grabbed scissors and started cutting it in multiple places. And so that's what I'm wearing till the new one comes in. But on the whole, those awful expanders are out. I have a wonderful doctor and a team. I have soft, small, firm breasts. I'm free of cancer. I'm healthy. I've lost 10 or 15 pounds of water weight just by getting these irritating and flaming structures out of my body. I feel good. I'm still sleeping on my back on a pillow fort Yes, I use my 20% coupon at Bed & Bath for a $72 pillow, but I had to build like a landslide of pillows, and I have them under my elbows. But I am sleeping longer, and I am really on the road to recovery. At 65 years old, I have implants for the first time in my life, and I am walking straight and feeling good and have something to look forward to. Besides my family and everything else, I have a lot to give and a lot in my heart. But for all of you women and men who have women in your lives, your mothers, your sisters, or yourself, or your friends, talk about it, reach out, get informed, find as much information as you can, and never feel intimidated that you can't ask. And with that, I thank you for all your love and support and positive affirmations and prayers for me. They worked. I feel great, and I, like I say, I'm looking forward to the holidays and the new year. So I wish you all the best. Happy December, Merry Christmas, late Happy Hanukkah, and Happy New Year. It's only going to get better, I promise. Thank you, and God bless.
You have been listening to the Confessions of a Clairvoyant Housewife podcast with intuitive expert Cindy Goldenberg. To learn more or stay connected, be sure to visit www.cindygoldenberg.com.